Greetings. You are tuned to KROV Oroville. This is 91.1 FM Community Radio. We're here at 2360 Oro Quincy Highway. And this program is Our Town. And my guest today is Bud Bolt from Bolt's Antique Tool Museum. And I guess the first thing to say is greetings, Bud, and welcome to the station again.
Well, thanks for inviting me over. Looking forward to chatting
with your listeners here for a while.
Okay, that's the correct title. I mean, I just think it is Bolt's Museum, but it's Bolt's
Antique Tool Museum.
We got to get these things right in the first place.
And for clarification, Lee, if you don't mind, it's a city museum. It was ours for 50 years, but we donated it to the city in 2006.
Oh.
So it's a city-owned museum. We're just volunteers there like several others that keep it open.
Okay, that's a major change. I don't know how many years since I've talked to you, but it was not that way before. So that relieves you of some responsibility, maybe, but it places other responsibilities. It sounds to me like there's two parts to that transition there.
Well, in all fairness, Lee, when we donated this to the city, we thought we would be walking away from it. But quite frankly, they had not taken on a complete museum, and it a little overwhelmed them. So they asked us to stay on as long as our health was good, and we chose to kind of make the transition. And that was supposed to be for a year, and that was 7 years ago, and we're still there. But it's a labor of love, and we enjoy it.
Well, if it weren't a labor of love, it wouldn't exist, because as anyone knows who knows anything about it, it might be a miracle that Bud Bolt's alive, because he gave so much heart to that museum. Doesn't seem like there was much heart left to pump the blood around him. So that's a really labor of love. I just know it, having been there and known you. And I can't say enough about how you can step into a world you've never known when you walk in the door. You might think you know, but no matter how recent or how far back the various exhibits go, new stuff to most people. And either that or it brings back fond memories or something. Either way, you can't lose. So you have goals in mind for your museum. Maybe some of your original ones you could talk about, or which ones you want to see happen in the future?
Well, I'd be happy to deal with that, Lee. To start with, when we were donating this to the city, we originally set a goal up that we would be an acceptable museum the day of the move and the transition and dedication. And then we would become a good museum over a period of time, with the ultimate goal to be a great museum. Now, we base that concept on the book Good to Great. And in reviewing that, if anybody chooses to do so, the book Good to Great deals with organizations and businesses that made the transition from good to great. And the common denominator in this is that none of them did this in one giant step. They did it in hundreds or thousands of small steps. So we're going to be a great museum. And every day, our volunteers that work with us, and we're just another one of them, we take many, many steps to make us a great museum. Now, to labor that point just a little, if 100 people come through our museum today, we would hope every one of them would leave thinking that's a great museum. On the other hand, right now as we sit here and speak, there's 3 volunteers down there working, and we have 24 altogether that contribute their time and efforts to make this a great museum. And we would hope that they would never say it's a great museum. We would hope every visitor would say it's great, but never the staff. Because if we ever start thinking it's great, we'll quit taking all those small steps to make it great. So, now I'm 86, so I probably won't be here 20 years from now. But on the other hand, I might. If I can share a little story with you here. I asked my doctor the other day if he could keep me alive forever. And he said, "Bud, I don't think I can." But he said, "I'll keep you around till they get the national debt paid off."
So, same difference.
I might be here a while.
Same difference.
Anyway, if I was here 20 years from now, I would hope that the docents working in the museum would still not be saying it's great, it's good, it's going to be great. Now, the other goal that we established right up front, and we think it's really important, and we'll never quit working on it as long as I can breathe and work there, is we want to be self-supporting. We see the city, this is not the first struggle they've had financially, and it won't be the last. And we want to generate enough revenue in that museum to where it can pay its own way, and it's not a burden on the taxpayers. And we work toward that objective every day.
But how can a museum raise funds? How can they gain, you know, the finances what mechanism would you have that would help you do that?
Well, of course, there's two basic mechanisms. One is we have started or tried for 7 years to get an endowment fund set up, and the city has now shifted to what they call a foundation, and we hope to see that formed. We understand they're making progress, but that's a long-term program. Now, on the other hand, I had a great opportunity a while back to meet with SCORE, and a wonderful organization, very professional people. And so I penciled out where we was, where we was trying to get to, and what, in my opinion, it would take to make us self-supporting. Now, I met with a Mr. Bill McGowan from SCORE, retired marketing executive with ARCO, teaches marketing at Chico State, total professional. He reviewed our material and our goals, and he said, "Bud, this is workable. This can be done." Now, that would involve us getting a minimum of 15 paid visitors a day, buying an entry ticket into the museum, and then we have a gift shop. We have a sizable inventory now. And with our average sales per visitor that goes through our gift shop and our profit margin that we have on that, if we had 15 visitors a day buying an entry ticket and buying the average through our gift shop, we would be very, very close to being self-supporting. Now, I've requested, I have not yet received it, but they tell me I will, a meeting with the city finance to review where our costs are and what we on location could do to reduce the overhead there a little. Right now it's impossible for us to break even, but we can reduce the costs. We can reduce the expenses, we think. Anyway, that's kind of the direction we're going, Lee.
Yeah, it should be obvious to me, but it really isn't. That when you walk into a museum or something or whatever, there's atmosphere, there's the reason you went there, there's all the distractions or attractions. But I bet you 1 person out of 100 doesn't think about utilities, taxes, building, upkeep, all the things that are needed. And I think maybe at least I have been guilty of enjoying things without even thinking about what's necessary for this to be here now and in the future. And that's, you know, to me, the thing would have been, oh, they have to have this exhibit and that and so on, and do these kind of filing and categorizing. But that wouldn't even be on my list of things that people have to do, to earn something to make you be there. So that's a point that needs to be made for Bolt's Tool Museum and for any museum.
Well, I'm very fortunate, Lee. It's hard to believe looking at me now, but I was young once. And when I was, I was appointed branch manager for Snap-on Tools and a newly opened branch in Salt Lake City. And I stayed with Snap-on about 10 years. And frankly, I could not have asked for a finer company and better training than they give me. And one of the things that was absolutely essential as a branch manager was to be able to analyze every aspect of that operation, and you had to watch your costs, whether it be the utility bill, transportation, telephone, whatever. But you had to watch those costs and keep them in line, and I was trained to do that.
Well, that's a good benefit for us, because it seems to me, maybe, if you look the other way around, and I don't know how it works, but if some very wealthy foundation or some city or some municipality decides we want a museum to memorialize blah, 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 then they're already taking on all the things you talked about in some way or another. But if you come as an individual with a bag of tools, that's a real challenge. My gosh.
Well, it is, and the city has been great with us as far as providing us a fine facility for this museum. It's their museum, but they have provided that. They've provided the overhead. They keep our computers online, although we furnish most of the computers. But they incur some expenses here, and we try to keep it to a minimum. And we have spent, we spend on an average out of our gift shop profits, about $200, $250 a month, month in and month out on, and that could be on printer ink or advertising, whatever, but we spend about that to help along, to reach that goal of being self-supporting.
For somebody who's not listening, well, yeah, because maybe somebody will tell them about this, but for somebody who's out there, where are you? Contact information, geographic location, are you in the phone book? Stuff like that.
I'm sorry, Lee. I didn't quite catch that.
Wondering what contact, where the location, and what contact information you might have.
Okay. Well, we're at 1650 Broderick Street in the historic downtown Orrville. If you're on Meyer or not quite familiar, we're almost behind the Ford dealership. If you're familiar with where the Chinese temple's at, we're just one block from it. If you follow the green line, say coming in from Highway 70, it doesn't come in the parking lot, but it leads you right to our parking lot.
Oh, good.
Now, we're also available naturally by phone at 538-2528. We have our webpage up and running, and I'll read that off. We're at www.boltsantiquetools.com. And once you've reached that, you reach our Facebook account. So there are several ways to contact us. We can get us by email, by snail mail, direct visit, and whatnot.
Thank you, Bud. And reminding you folks that are tuning in, maybe didn't know where we started, but we're with Bud Bolt of Bolt's Antique Tool Museum here in town. Quite an attraction. I have to digress just for a minute, but I'm not, because it's all a part of the heart of the thing. I remember going a few years ago and seeing takes my breath away to think about it, one of your films, you know, about the Dust Bowl and what was going on then. Maybe that would be something we haven't really done, I think, is when you go in there, what to expect. And certainly one of them is you do have, what, a film library that people can choose from to hear, whatever?
Watch. Yes, we do. And, Lee, I've put on the history of the Dust Bowl or survival of the Dust Bowl many, many times. And I'm willing to put that on any time for a group by appointment. But we do have it there if someone wanted to just come in, sit down, and watch it. The thing that interested me to start with to put it on was that I lived through it. I was born and raised in Nebraska, and I was five in 1932 when the storms first hit us, and I was 10 when they quit blowing. So it's a natural for me to put it on, and I enjoy doing it, and people find it quite educational.
And then, of course, that you do have a whole library of films there besides
well,
that.
Well, we don't have an extensive library of films. We do have, of course, the videos that have been made on the museum itself. We have them not only to view but also to purchase if they choose to do so. It was made by, gosh, I can't think of the contract out of Chico State that developed this, but it's professionally made. 2.5-hour video on the museum.
And what about the contents thereof? And from what seed did this thing grow, this big tree of a museum? What was the seed, the initial little thing that made it happen? Something, I guess, in your mind or in your life?
Well, now, Lee, this has been before you was born. But in 1957, I was branch manager for Snap-on Tools in Salt Lake City, Utah, and it was a newly opened branch. And when they opened that branch, naturally it got publicity. And almost immediately, the school started inviting, asking for a speaker to come in and talk to their students. Now, keep in mind, Lee, back in that time frame, almost every school taught shop classes. Not necessarily true today, but then they did. And so there was a vast amount of schools that wanted speakers. And I found it extremely difficult to get and hold the attention of these 15, 16-year-old students. And I was quite inexperienced myself. So in Pocatello, Idaho, in 1957, in preparation for a presentation the next day, I worked a couple of trading posts and what we call junk shops in those days, and picked up 6 tools where the socket was permanently welded to the handle, and that was the type of tools that my students sitting in front of me, their fathers and grandfathers would have used. And so I presented them to them, and now this is what Dad and Grandpa used. This famous detachable socket set is what you have to use. I found that an effective means to getting hold the attention of these students, and it got me interested in antique tools. Now, quite frankly, the thing that really hooked me was I was asked around 1963 to speak in Dallas, Texas at an International Tool Company sales seminar, and they asked me to speak on a brief history of tools, but the effect tools had on our personal lives. And really, it was that research that hooked me. Because when I finished that research, I realized that tools were the most important man-made product on the planet. With tools, a human being can do anything, and without tools, we're just another animal. So that's where it all come from. It started with 6 tools, which are still on display in the museum.
What a story that is. And I'm sure that many of the exhibits have stories of their own.
Well,
sure.
You know, you couldn't accumulate for 50 years and not associate a lot of stories. And Mom and I were very blessed. We retired at 51 years old, and we hit the road with our RV, and we traveled to the United States, not out of the country, quite extensively for 25 years. And, yes, we just have wonderful stories and memories of where we found what in North Dakota or Georgia or wherever. You know,
makes me wonder if there was room to even sit in the driver's seat for that thing.
Well, the wife did complain when I started putting them on her lap.
Yeah, I bet. Yeah.
So anyway, but yeah, there. And then, of course, Lee, we're so blessed now since we've got the museum. See, before we donated this to the city of Orrville, many people wanted to donate tools to the museum. We could not assure them of longevity for their donation, nor could we provide them with the documentation where they could write it off their income tax. Well, once we had that in place with the city where the continuity should be there for untold number of years and it's tax deductible, the donations have just poured in. We've had well over 10,000 donations come in. Not that we could use them all, but we've had over 10,000 donated since we opened, and they've shipped them to us from all over the world.
Yeah, it sounds like we'd have to have a bigger city to
well,
the rate you're going.
One thing about it, we sure need a bigger building.
Yeah, I bet.
The building we're in was originally designed for 3,000 maximum feet of display space. Presently, we are well over 4,200, and we need at least 500 more right now, which would put us at about 5,000. But the long-term plan does call for an additional building on our property of 70 by 100, but there again,
sure.
From what I read in the paper and understand, the city's got some financial problems, so I don't know when that'll happen.
Yeah, okay. You mentioned the web page. Of course, that's all new news since you started, probably. Well, obviously, since you started collecting, but even since you established yourself, something like a web page. How does that work for you? What service does it provide? What information does it give? Just if you can talk about the web page a little bit.
Well, the web page provides a vast amount of information. We are fortunate to have a very professional webmaster. He's in Armagosa Valley, Nevada. Only gets to the museum once every few years, but everything's handled naturally by electronic mail. But we reach people all over the world. I have in front of me here, to just refer that to start with, we average over 40,000 hits a month to our web page. And we just hear from countries all over the world, and we hear from people all over the world. So it has reached a lot. Now, as far as actual traffic through the door, it's pretty hard to measure. But on the other hand, donation-wise, it's led to a lot. It leads to sales in our gift shop, and it's a valuable asset to us. Now, I have to complain a little bit about one of our prime volunteers last month, because our hits were just under 43,000 for the month, and I want a hit a minute, and it only come out to 59 hits an hour, and I think if she'd have figured a little better, we'd have got that 60.
Oh, boy. That's
so, anyway, it's a valuable tool. And
that's big time. That's big
time.
We're
now on Facebook, and that also is becoming a valuable tool to us.
Yeah, I bet it is, yeah. I'm sure when folks have people come to visit from out of town, certainly that's you've got to be one of the destinations, one of the things they want to show their friends or their family. Or.
Well, they really do, Lee. It's amazing how many people, like, I staffed last week ago Sunday, and we had 10 in, and putting a river one of them from out of town, and one little group of four was just charming. Drove up from Elk Grove just to see the museum, and needless to say, that's a thrill to us. So the web page is a valuable asset to us in getting those people in.
All right. Again, folks, for those just tuning in, or even for those who aren't just tuning in, we have Bud Bolt from Bolt's Antique Tool Museum here in the studio, and he's providing a lot of information about his life and the museum's life, which are totally intertwined. And it's interesting to me that something as intricate and involved as what you have there wasn't really, like, someday when I'm a big boy, I want to have a tool museum. I mean, it's just not like, but it's something that I can see in your life. In your recent conversation, it was sort of inevitable. It was inevitable that you would have a place to display tools, and that you would, from there, build it up as strongly as you could so it could support itself and so it could provide variety and interesting objects for people.
Well, it's been a growing process. I was going to quit at 1,000 tools, but it was so much fun, we decided to keep going, and I'd probably still have it at home rather than donate it to the city, but the wife got a little aggravated with me when I started putting them in the living room, so we done it. But it's been really exciting to see it grow.
You must probably have no answer to this, but maybe you do. But is there a truly favorite piece or exhibit, I guess we should call it, of yours? In other words, if you had to just pick one thing, Is that even possible? Is that
well, we have a little over 12,000 tools on display in the museum, and every one of them are special, but... excuse me.
Sure.
Historically, there's nothing that exceeds the history of the monkey wrench. Now, people laugh about and joke about, and it's been some very humiliating things said about the monkey wrench. The fact is, that's the most important man-made product ever made. Now, people struggle with that a little and wonder where we're coming from. But let's go back to the, let's say, the 1700s on back. Far enough, we know steel was discovered in the Middle Ages, but it was used only for weapons of war. There was nothing mechanical to use it on. Then for after the first iron tools was made, for 2,200 years, a blacksmith was the world toolmaker. But everything was individually handmade. Now, when we creep in, starting to get into the Industrial Revolution, that's nearly impossible because we have to have machines to make that happen, but we had no tools to build machines.
Gotcha.
So when the monkey wrench was patented and mass-produced starting in 1835, we could then start mass-producing machines. And so the monkey wrench, if there's any one wrench, yes, and you'll notice that's our logo.
Yeah, yeah. All right, that should give some people a little respect for something that they might take for granted. Their main emotion toward it is, where did I leave that, maybe? But to have a respect for what it really means, that's quite an observation. I really like that idea. Let's see what else Bud has on his mind here. We have some thoughts for some other things. Passports?
Well, I'd like to... How much time we got, Lee?
We got till noon, and if we need more time, we got that.
You mean today or tomorrow?
Well, I think we better stay today, because we
unless
somebody's going to bring us food and stuff.
Well, I'd like to cover, if I could, please, the databases that we're getting in place in the museum.
Oh, sure. Okay, cool.
We're very fortunate. Our oldest son is our IT for the museum, and we have four information centers set up now, talking commuter stations. But the big thing for us was they just finished here a few months ago, and we have in place a database now to where Lee, I understand you're a VIM tool collector, V-I-M, and you walk in the door and said, Bud Bolt, I or the docent on duty. I'm a VIM tool collector, and I don't want to see anything else. I just want to see your VIM tools. Well, now, there isn't a docent down there that would have a clue. Some of them wouldn't even know we had a VIM tool. Well, we now have a database where you go over and select the brand and type in VIM, and that tells us where every VIM tool is in that museum. And our museum is laid out by area A through, and by board number, and then on each board by item number. So I'm glancing at a sheet here that on VIM tools, and it says that on board 79, in area H2, item 1, is a VIM hubcap puller or hubcap remover. Now, if we walk over there and check that, Lee, you will find that's exactly what's there. And that's true with every tool in that museum. We now can find it. Now, that's extremely important for us, but now when a donation comes in, we can't remember, do we have it or don't we have it? So we go type that into the database, pull it up, okay, we have a VIM. It's someplace we go look. It is not this one, so we have a new tool to add to the display. So that's one of the databases that the most important one we're having in place right now.
Sure, that would put me to the mind of walking into the library and looking for a book, and they'd say, well, help yourself.
Yeah.
Go find it.
Oh, yes. Without this, we were finding that it was almost impossible. I've processed a high percentage of these tools, but quite frankly, I can't remember where 12,000 tools
not.
Are.
I wonder why. Huh?
And the day will come when this generation of docents will be gone, and we had to get something in place for the incoming
Sure.
Donut docents that's going to be asked these questions.
Well, even that makes me think of someone who really has a fondness or a desire to know about a certain tool or if it's there, and he might be somewhere in another state or in another country. Now they can contact you, and they can say, you know, with a certainty, they have such and such there, and know that it's there. That's really
And, Lee, we experience that probably 9 out of 10 days on our computer incoming mail. We'll have requests for information. I just got one yesterday on a fence stretcher, another one on a post mall. I mean, and yes, okay, do we have it? If so, where is it? Is it what they have? Or, in other words, it's a valuable asset.
But you mentioned what they have, and that's another thing I was wondering. Are you aware of or in contact with other tool museums around the country? I assume you might be.
Well, we wish we was, but there isn't any.
No kidding.
The Smithsonian Institute has acknowledged that we're the largest documented collection known to exist. And we did a major survey several years ago trying to find out where the other tool museums are. And I have all of this in a binder down at the museum. And quite frankly, nobody could tell us. Now, double talking here a little. There is a tool museum in Marsing, Idaho. And we've visited his, and he's visited ours. But he only collects farm implement tools. He doesn't cover the whole spectrum of the tool history. But he does have a beautiful, well-laid-out museum. But other than that, we have documentation that even the Ford and the Smithsonian do not have anywhere near what we have. So we really don't. We do our best, but there's not many out there to talk to.
Boy, that gives you an interesting feeling. At least it does me. You think you might appreciate something a little bit, but maybe if you learn more about it, you realize your appreciation was maybe shallow or maybe not based on all the facets that this has to interest you and interest other people.
Well, Lee, when I put on, and I put this on many, many times, and I would perhaps some of our listeners have set in on it, I put on a historical presentation on the evolution of tools, starting with the stone and walking them forward. And I really firmly believe that everybody that's ever sat in on it have been a little bit surprised at perhaps their misconceptions or hadn't even thought about what really happened to get us from the primitive stone to where we are.
Well, it also speaks a little bit for the ability of people's minds to see a problem, have something that they're dealing with, and instead of dealing with it the way it always has been or giving up or something, they envision what would make this task possible. And it's really a testament to ingenuity, I guess, in a way.
Well, we have on display a lot of handmade tools, and every one of those represent the ingenuity of man. Now, if I can divert there just a little bit, let's go back to 1797. Eli Whitney, name that's familiar to almost everybody, he had already built his cotton gin, and he'd already pretty much developed the concept of component manufacturers and then assembling them into a finished product. Now, when he was going to build his version of the steam engine, he became the father of the tools industry as far as we are concerned. He's the first one recorded to have stepped back and literally said, whether there was anybody listening or not, it's another question, but he literally said, we can't build anything until we build tools. And that same truth holds today. And so every tool really represents the ingenuity of someone who's seen a problem that could only be solved through the production, manufacture, and use of a tool. And so a ton of history in there to look at.
Yeah. It's got to increase your respect for things that you used to take for granted maybe or never were aware of.
Well, you know, folk, people are pretty much with their car as they are with flipping the light switch on. The lights come on, they're not sure what happened to get them there, and they don't really have too much interest in finding out. Most people get in the automobile and drive and don't have any even remotely interest in finding out what did it take to build that.
Sure, sure.
And without tools, it wouldn't be there.
Sure, it wouldn't even exist, would it? What an interesting thought. That's one of the first things you said when you came in today. What the world would be like, you know, without tools. No comparison. All right, database, donations then?
We covered donations a little bit.
Pretty much.
I would like to emphasize that one of the reasons that we are successful and people are pleased to donate to us is, first of all, they don't want Dad or Grandpa's tools scattered seven ways to the wind. And when they're donated to us, we fill out a form that lists the donation by brand, the year it was made, part number, and the application. Then if that tool is going to be and is displayed on our wall, we'll post in there what area it's in, what board it's on, and what item it's on. And we then, after this is accepted by the city, we then mail this confirmation, a copy of it, to that donor, with the thought being, and they do it regularly, people walk in and say, well, you know, my dad donated this tool, I'd like to see it.
Sure.
Okay, we can walk him directly to that tool. Now, if by chance that tool got moved for some reason, then the database would tell us where that tool is now. So it has helped, but we are just so blessed that donations, just got a great box full in, shipped in from New York, got them in here a while back, and they just come in from all over. Our barbed wire collection was shipped to us from Scottsdale, Arizona. Freight prepaid, everything, it's marvelous. They just pour in.
Is it faintly possible, I shouldn't ask this, I have to do these things because they run into my mind, and that is, do you ever feel overwhelmed, like, oh my, not another tool, you couldn't possibly, could you?
Well, yes, sometimes we are, because of lack of staff.
Lack of staff and lack of space, sure.
We know health space and staff, that's our biggest shortage, is staff, is people to handle this, but on the other hand, Lee, every day is like Christmas because when you get that box, boy, you don't know what you're going to find in there.
Yeah.
And when you find one that you don't have and you've been looking for, or maybe you didn't even know it existed.
There you go.
But that's exciting. So we just say keep them coming. We'll handle them somehow.
All right. Hear that, world. You got him. He'll check them out for you. Bud Bolt, by the way, from Bolt's Antique Tool Museum here in beautiful Oroville, California. And how interesting it is, this, what I would call somewhat, I don't know what's the proper word. I don't like to say the word remote, but it's kind of a hidden location for many folks. And to think what we have here, we're pretty lucky. We're very fortunate to have what we do.
Well, I think it's quite unique when which is a fine small town, but has the only tool museum in the world in it.
That's
so it's a little prestige there.
Boy, I'll say, puff out your chest with that one.
One thing we're doing, Lee, I'd move along here a little bit, is the city has provided a passport program available to the public, and we're proud to. To present this, for $25, Lee can come in and purchase a passport, and that gives him and three of his guests access to any of our museums for a 12-month period. So if you bought it today for 12 months, you can take your four or three guests and yourself and visit any museum at no additional cost. It's all a part of that passport program. And we're proud of that one.
Yeah, now that's really good, because what will happen is there might only be one place they're interested in or something, but they'll say, well, look, we've got three more we can do. Lo and behold, the one they do casually might be the one that strikes them closer in their heart and makes them really, really appreciative of it. That's a great project.
Well, it is, Lee, and I'd like to mention here that we're the only museum that opens at 10 in the morning. And we do this for not only the passport holders, but for the general public. We find that over 40% of our visitors come between 10 and 12. And the thing that the out-of-towners love about it is they can, say, leave Sacramento after breakfast, drive to Orville, take in the Bolt Museum from 10 till 12, and it takes that to go through it properly. Maybe go over and have a nice lunch in one of our little downtown cafes or whatever. And then they can pick up one or two museums in the afternoon and still get home ahead of the traffic.
Sure.
And but if we opened at 12 like all the rest of them, we now limit that visitor to where he's got roughly a four-hour span to do his thing. So we find that's beneficial to the visitor. We also stay open 7 days a week and have for years. We operate from 10 in the morning till 3:45 in the afternoon every day but Sunday. On Sunday, we would open 10 in the morning, but we don't have staff. So we open at 11:45 till 3:45 on Sundays. But the whole thing is just geared for the convenience of the visitor, not necessarily the convenience of the docent or the...
Sure. Well, it makes me understand very, very clearly how you have a need for docents, how you've got a lot of hours to fill, and people who do that for you, I'm sure, are impressed with, they need to be impressed with the importance of their position and their time that they give so that they can be relied upon for being there for people.
Well, we're very fortunately, take for instance Mr. Bill. We call everybody Mr., but that's Bill Berg. Many people know Bill. He's been with us since day one, and he staffs on Sunday, and he probably hasn't missed 10 Sundays in 7 years.
Wow.
And but that's true, all of them. Once they get their day, George takes Thursday, Don takes Tuesday. I mean, and so, but the other thing we do that we think is important is each of these docents have their project, their area of the museum that they kind of accept the responsibility for. We'll take Mr. Don, who's down there today. He's the manager of our gift shop, and that's his number one responsibility, but he also sees to it that our money is properly accounted for. Now, Mr. Bill, he does a lot of research for us, anything pertaining to patent information, but he has his area of expertise and responsibility. For instance, now, Thursdays, we have a volunteer that comes in that handles our Tool Liver Club. But they all have their area of responsibility, so they have something invested in this, and they feel good about it. They're proud of it.
Well, sure, and anybody that comes in there is going to have access to someone who really understands what's going on.
Well, and is interested in it.
Yeah, they're not left alone to necessarily wander and have questions that aren't answered, or to even have things suggested to them they never thought to ask.
We are just so pleased that, for instance, here's one that our volunteers have been working on us with. We've developed, maybe you've seen it in the paper this morning, and we had a headline or a front page article on it here a week or two ago about our heroes boards. And that's another total project. But we developed these boards to honor the heroes at World War II, Korean War, and then we have one that was World War II, Korean War, and Vietnam War. But we have special displays built up on them, and all of our docents have a hand in making this happen. A real important asset to us. One thing, Lee, I'd like to just cover because I need to get another play. How much? We're about out of time. But you said we're going to go tomorrow.
I said tomorrow.
Yeah, okay.
But if we were to quit early, we'd quit in 10 minutes. But
what did that guy in the Senate do the other day? He went 21 hours, didn't he?
Yeah, something like that.
How about you and I can go longer now?
I don't know. They say there's no end to hot air in this world.
Well, anyway, one thing I'd like to just go to the public with here, because we really need some help on this. What we've done over the last 7 years in the way of marketing has not certainly been a failure, but it hasn't given us the results we want and the results we need to be self-supporting. So we're in the process right now of launching a new concept of marketing, and it's going to involve a lot of hours and a lot of people. But we think it's well worthwhile, and we're going to reach out extensively to such as wrench clubs, tool collector clubs, motorcycle, RV clubs, tractor clubs, etc., and get that traffic coming in there. So that's a program we're working on. And we need people that they can spare a few hours to help us develop these mailing lists on these. There's thousands and thousands of these clubs on the internet. It's a case of gleaning that information, getting it into a workable database to where we can direct mail them to advise them what we have here in Oroville.
Yeah.
So we're moving in that direction.
It's a nice thought to me that out there somewhere are large numbers of people who are going to receive a pleasant surprise. They're going to hear from you, and it's going to strike a chord with them. They don't know it yet. They don't know you exist, but you're going to touch something in them that's important, and they're going to be really, well, they're going to be pleased and surprised. It's going to mean a lot to them. I can see that happening.
Well, we certainly hope so. The people that are visit us are just amazed at what we have there, and I'm pleased to say that one of the leading artists in the community has come on board with us, not as a docent, just strictly as a volunteer, to help us upgrade the entire museum artistically, and we're working on that as staff and money permits, but we're really looking forward to that. It's exciting to see those improvements almost on a daily basis. Lee, one thing I'd like to cover, do we have time to cover?
Sure we do.
I'd like to just cover so that anyone has any interest will know that we try to run a good ship, and we keep extensive statistics on the museum. Now, for instance, I'm just going to review here, and I'll kind of read them off. We have a statistic on this museum where by month we keep track of how many visitors we have, how many of those are international, national, regional, and local, and then how many are men, women, and children, so that we can keep track of where our visitors are coming from and what percentage are from what category. I'm looking at the 8 month end of August statistics, and at that time we're running 50% of our visitors from the local market, local meaning from say Yuba City to Chico, and the other 50% are beyond that. So we're pleased to say that 50% of our visitors are coming in basically from out of our geographic area. A high percentage of them, or maybe not a high percentage, but a lot of these people are motelling it, staying in the RV parks, and they're the people that we want to reach. We want them to come in here and spend a few days, not a few hours. Statistically, 56% of our visitors are men, and only 30% women, 14% children. We are making efforts to get that percentage of women up. Now, what happens to us quite regularly is a car will pull up and three men will get out, and they've dropped their wives off over downtown, which is fine, or perhaps at the casino, because they're not interested in a tool museum. And we need to get those people, those ladies, in there.
Sure.
One thing we've done to do that is we brought an expert up from Elk Grove to make our restrooms user-friendly. So we now have probably the only user-friendly restrooms in the community. But they're beautifully displayed, and we encourage anybody to come in and look at them. Now, I don't want to labor this too long because you don't have a lot of time.
We've got time.
But we also keep track of how many of our visitors come in on Monday through Sunday so that we know statistically what percentage of our visitors we get on what day. We keep track of how many come in between 10 and 12 and between 12 and 4. We find that our hourly visitor count is higher mornings than the afternoons, although we only get 40% of our visitors morning, but that's a two-hour span. 60% in the afternoon, but that's 4 hours. So we keep that. Then, of course, we keep, this is thanks to Don and Bill, they keep excellent financial records on the museum. We know exactly how much we sell, what we get in donations, our total cash, and how much we spend back on the museum each month. And for instance, for this year to date, we've spent $210.89 per month out of our gift shop profits back on to develop that museum. Now, one thing I'd like to emphasize is two basic reasons that I keep these statistics. Number one, I was trained to do it. I was trained if you're going to run a business, you have to know where you're at and exactly what's going on. The other thing is that, like I said, I'll be here till I get the national debt paid off, but not long after that probably. But someday there'll be somebody else come in and take this so-called job I have over. And when they do, I don't want them to have to look for where this museum is. I want them just simply look at this. That's exactly where this museum is. This is exactly what we've done to get there. Now from that, they can build their pattern or their path to reach their objectives. And the other thing, when the foundation is established, and we hope that soon, we're going to be looking out there for people to donate sizable pieces of money to this museum. I don't know if you've ever done it or anybody else probably have done it more than I have, but the fact is if somebody's going to invest for the future of this museum, they're going to have to be absolutely assured that it's managed properly. And so we want to be able to hand it to them and say, hey, here's exactly where we're at, exactly where we're going, here's our path to get there, so that they can invest with us in confidence to develop and see this museum reach its potential.
That all makes very good sense, Bud, because, again, as I said, I'm speaking from my point of view in a way, but probably speaking for a lot of people's point of view. You go to a place, you see something, you have no concept of all that's important behind it that not only makes it pleasurable to be there, but possible. You know, you can like what you have. You can have great exhibits, but nothing's going to survive or be approachable by anyone financially until they know, you know, what's your history, since you're doing historical things. And you have a history of tools, and you have a history of the museum. You've got a dual history project going on here, and it's up to date, too. It's not just history. History including contemporary. So you've got it all laid out. I'm totally impressed.
Well, we work at it. Now, Lee, do I have time to tell the public just a quick story?
You know, as I said, I'm the boss here right now of this time.
Well, you know, with the name Bolt, being in the tools business,
sure,
all my working life, I was kidded an awful lot about that, and I had a lot of nicknames hung on me. Some of them I can't talk about on the air, but when I was about 40, they started calling me Rusty Bolt.
Yeah.
And now I'm 86, and my goal is to not be referred to as Deadbolt. So with that, Lee, I sure thank you for your opportunity to visit with you here today.
Thank you so much. We have Bud Bolt from Bolt's Antique Tool Museum here in Oroville. We've given a lot of contact information, and it's certainly available. You won't have any trouble locating it. And I do encourage folks to take advantage of it. And, I know from experience you'll be glad you did. So thank you so much again, Brian.
Thank you, Lee.